My name is Chris Raymer. I'm a very grateful recovered alcoholic. I am delighted to be here. Nervous as hell as always. I don't know what it is. I'm the shyest person in this gathering. And the fact that I have all these people sitting on the hill behind me, it sucks. If you see any of these guys rushing me, y'all warn me. I got a bunch of night buddies in here. Y'all get the heads up, huh? I want to thank, Kevin and Neil for picking us up, and Holly, the rest of the committee for asking me to come. I want to make a special thanks to Holly and them. I don't know who decided to do this, but they allowed me to bring my wife, which is a cool thing. Patty's here with me, and little short Yankee, and y'all could all come talk to her because she talks lots and doesn't have a problem. She's not shy, and some of y'all, bless your hearts, you know, y'all tried to have conversations with me, and I do great in conversation. If I can answer it in yes, no, maybe, y'all think I'm kidding. Those that have tried, bless you. I'm just shy. That's the way it is. Until I get up here and start talking about Alcoholics Anonymous and our sister fellowships, folks, if I don't do anything real stupid in a couple of weeks, I'll have 18 years of sobriety. And I had a tough time getting 8 days. You know, I spent ages trying to get sober. I know some cats that have tried in and out for a million years. I actively tried for 7 years to get sober and almost died. And I'll tell you a little bit about that. But And I worked for a hospital, a treatment center up in the hill country, outside of Kerrville, Texas. And I get to work with thousands of alcoholics and addicts. And I get to watch so many people suffer needlessly from this disease. And so I want to say this going in the door, because I know some of you, this talk will offend. I'm a big book thumper, and if you're not, you know, you might want to go fire some fireworks or something. I don't know. You're probably not going to like what I've got to say. But, you know, it's like alcoholics and addicts are so dadgum sensitive. You know, have y'all ever noticed that? It may come as a surprise to some of you. But, you know, but we are. We're real sensitive. And as long as I'm saying exactly the way you believe, that Chris Raymer, what a handsome young man he is, you know. And then the minute I say something that you can't jive with, I'm the Antichrist. I don't know. Do you think for a second that I'm going to stand up here and not say something from this podium that will offend somebody? It ain't going to happen. So I'm just telling you, going in the door, I love you, and I love this fellowship. And I all of my talks, you know, guys, I travel about every weekend. About 3 weekends out of the month, I'm traveling somewhere doing something like this. And it's not for any other reason other than I am passionate about recovery. And for the alcoholic and addict that's dying tonight, I feel a sense of responsibility to tell it like it is. And you're going to hear my story. And if it doesn't jive with yours, so what? Make sense? Let me cut a little closer to the chase, because some of you are looking perplexed. If you believe that you can work these steps any way you want and take as long as you want and come to 90 meetings in 90 days and everything's just going to be okay and don't drink between meetings and just go to meetings and everything's just going to be happy, 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 you're not going to like this talk. But you see, because that's not my experience. I did that crap. I did that forever. I did that. I don't believe that there's any such thing for real alcoholics and addicts. We just read it. The sister just read it when she read How It Works. Fearless and thorough from the very start. And working this thing your own way is not fearless and thorough. Make sense? That's where I'm coming from. I'm talking tonight to the real alcoholic and addict. I think I'm in Scotland. Alcoholism and drug addiction, I'll mention that this time and then I'll try to stop because I know where we are. But this disease is fatal, folks. It's progressive in nature. Some of y'all can well attest. A lot of people I know in this this gathering I have known for years, and I have watched them come in and stay for a while and go back out again, just like I did for so many years. And every time they came back in, I've yet to see one alcoholic yet come back into this fellowship and say, God, it was just so much better this time, you know? They just don't do that, you know? It's just, it gets worse and worse and worse, till finally we can't stand the pain anymore, and we either off ourselves or resign ourselves to the fact that we're going to drink the rest of our lives. It's a tragic, it's a terrible place to be. There is a better way. We've had the solution for 70 years, and far be it from me to come up with my own plan, you know? Doctor's opinion in the front of the book says that unless we can, again, have this entire psychic change, we're not going to stay sober. And everybody seems to want to read that and nod their head and talk about it, but nobody really wants to seem to take it to heart. I'm going to tell you this, folks. It is about a spiritual experience. If you can get sober on a non-spiritual basis, my book says you're not one of us. Are you a member of our fellowship? If you say you are, you are. That's the way it works. But a real alcoholic is beyond human aid. This is not a self-help program. Never has been, never will be. It's a spiritual program of action. You do certain things, you're guaranteed to have this spiritual experience. And why am I hitting this so hard? It's because I watch so many people staying dry one freaking day at a time, putting a little time together, you know? Oh, this is it. You know, this is as good as it gets? Just not drinking today? You see, my experience is exactly opposite that. My experience is that when I stopped trying to stay dry one day at a time and started trying to live close to God one day at a time, my life got good and got good quick. There were some major changes that took place in my existence. I'm not standing up. People say, Chris, you ought to be a preacher. I know I could be rich. Instead, I've kind of devoted my life to Alcoholics Anonymous and poverty. So, people say, you're going to have lots of stars in your crown when you get to heaven, Chris. I said, screw a bunch of stars. I want it now. You know, bring on the cash. God. Physical allergy. Phenomena called craving. You got to have that to be an alcoholic. Y'all down with that? Book talks about it in the first 23 pages. When I start to drink, can I guarantee you how much I'm going to drink every time? It's a yes or no question. Sometimes. That's what I used to drive my sponsor. Chris, it's a yes or no question. Answer it with a yes or no answer. No, I can't. Understand the craving? You know, when we're out there drinking, we don't sense the craving because it's in our... We talked about this once before. There's something right now that everybody in this gathering is craving. What is it? I know. Sex. No. Wrong. I didn't say. Somebody else said it. That's wrong. Wrong answer. Some of us are craving that too. Right, Patty? I know. I'm just kidding. This phenomena called craving. No, what is it? It's air. It's oxygen. Nobody's sitting here thinking, I got to breathe. Nobody's doing that until somebody gets their little bony fingers around your neck, starts to cut that supply off, and then all of a sudden it becomes very important. Y'all with us on that one? This craving. Why do you think, I don't know about in Arizona, this areas where, but you know, in Texas they close the beer coolers at midnight, and they don't open them up, they chain them so you can't get in. No, they do. So you can go into a 7-Eleven and buy a Coca-Cola, but you can't go buy a beer. And at 7 o'clock they unchain them. Why am I out in the car at 6:30, listening to the radio, waiting, along with a couple of other cars I notice, you know, for the coolers to unlock, because I'm thirsty. It's because I've still got the alcohol that I drank the night before in my body, and the craving is kicking my butt. Now, normal people don't understand this. Why would anybody sit out in a parking lot at 7 o'clock and wait for a beer if they didn't need to? But you nodding your heads, you know exactly what I'm talking about. And it's a terrible place to be. You couple this with a mental obsession, and what you've got is a devastating illness. Once the substance is out of your body, the craving's not the problem. We detox gazillions of people. The problem is they don't stay detoxed. You with us? Why is it that I go back? I can quit. I've quit 1,000 times. Why is it that I always end up going back? Because my mind tells me a few weeks out, and I'm coming apart at the seams, and my mind starts to tell me, it's okay if I smoke a joint. Talking to people all day today, telling them, it's okay if I eat a couple of pills. You hear this other little voice that says, that's the stupidest idea you ever did. Don't do that. It's just a pill. Why you needn't do that? See, your head is your enemy. The book says the main problem of the alcoholic center is in his mind rather than his body. And that's what we can do. Treatment centers, of which I'm a part of, we can detox you. We can get you clear of the substance. We do a great job detoxing. We do a piss poor job getting you to understand that it's going to take something a little bit more than I'm trying to turn over a new leaf with this cussing business. There's something more than a triggers list is going to fix us. You know what I'm saying? I mean, if a triggers list and some positive affirmations were going to get me sober, buddies, I'd have been sober in 1980. And that offends some of you, see, because you've got your trigger. It makes me want to puke. Alcoholics, it's the same stuff. Well, my sponsor says, well, here's one I love. My counselor says, oh, it must be true then, huh? Maybe it is and maybe it isn't. Alcoholics and addicts must have a spiritual experience in order to recover. Yeah? I got to mention this because I'm going to go back to it in just a few seconds if I can weave this back through. My book says on page 24 that I won't remember the consequences of even a week or a month ago. When that mental obsession returns, I'm going to go use. Make sense? That's why so many of us in this room have not been able to stop, even though the circumstances continue to get worse and worse and worse. I hear people all the time talking about a bottom. We get the hospitals and they got the young adults in there and they say, well, I just don't think he's hit a bottom yet. Where's the bottom? Everybody said, well, when you stop digging, but let's get a little deeper than that. Where's the bottom? One DWI, is that enough? It is for some people. Some people get arrested and they put the plug in the jug and never touch another drop. They're not real alcoholics. Because the real alcoholic will go 6 months down and not think about it, and his little head will start telling him to drink again, and he'll put it in his body again and get DWI number two. And number three, our jails are full of people that have had three DWIs. What was up with the first one? Did they think the judge was just joking with them? Jeez. The divorce? Is that going to be enough? How about when they take your kids? Is that going to be enough to get you to stop? I get a little offended by it when I sit in meetings and everybody wants to start talking about the thing that got them sober. You know, if that thing got you sober, you're not one of us. If you can stop because of your kids, because of your wife, because of the legal, because of your health, I'm... Rock on, brother. I'm so proud of you, you know? It's just not my experience. And I'm sitting in the meetings listening to that stuff. Here's what my bottom was. And I'll talk about it a little bit more. But in 87, there's a couple of old coots sat down, and for the first time, I was in AA for 7 years, and for the first time, a couple of guys sat me down and qualified me. Y'all know what that means? The book talks about it pretty extensively. They qualified me to find out if I was really even one of us. Because obviously something in my head was telling me I wasn't one of you because I kept relapsing. I never would work the steps, never would get a sponsor, never would buy your book. Buddies, when the reality of this fatal illness creeps in and you realize that you're it, that you're screwed, that's as low as you'll ever need to go. From there, you will do the steps. I hear people all the time, I'm having trouble on a four-step. Horse hockey. This could be difficult. Boris Hockey, you're having trouble with the first step. Because if you're sitting in this gathering with us tonight, and you've been around the fellowship about 6 months, and you're still dicking with a fourth step, you are not convinced you're one of us. Where's the sense of urgency? See what we're doing? Because see, what we have is that we have this little window of opportunity. A lot of you guys that have been sober before know exactly what I'm talking about. We've got this little window when we detox and we start feeling pretty good. And that little window, the book talks about it. It's I hear people in treatment talk about it. They refer to it as the pink cloud period. You with us? Which I think is as disrespectful as can be. It's called God's grace. And that obsession to use leaves you. And you got a little window to finish the work. Early guys in Alcoholics Anonymous, folks, none of those guys took any longer than 30 or 40 days to work the steps. None of them. And yet we think we can sit on our butts for 6 months while we finish the work at our leisure. We watch thousands relapse around that nonsense. I hear people all the time. We just read it and how it works. We beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. And that always translates to take your time to work the steps. I'm going to say it again. If you can take your time to work the steps, maybe you're not one of us. But if you're having trouble staying sober and you're sick and tired of picking up little desire chips, maybe you want to finish these steps with the desperation of a drowning man that the book talks about and get well. Then you too can introduce yourself like I just introduced myself, as a recovered alcoholic. Recovered, folks. Well, that's not very humble. Doesn't he know that we'll always be recovering? No. Screw you. 2 weeks after I got to this fellowship, folks, I'm working the steps and the obsession to drink and drug lifted from me. 2 weeks after I got to this fellowship and the miracle took place. And I have not obsessed about alcohol or dope in nearly 18 years. I'm as recovered as I'm going to get. Room for improvement in other areas of my life? Absolutely. But the alcoholism and drug addiction, buddy, we got licked. As long as I stay on the spiritual path and continue to do what I'm supposed to do, we're set like a champ. I think the nerve of us to water this message down. I mean, that's why we can't keep the young adults in our meetings. Who wants to enter into a fellowship where you have to admit that you're sick every day? That all you have is today. That's not what the book says. Book says I got a daily reprieve based on the maintenance of my spiritual condition. You with us? Some of you are not. I'll be around all day tomorrow. We can chat. And I hope you do. And I got some business cards, or you can take the business cards and email me anonymously and tell me what an asshole I am. That's okay too. I grew up in the hill country, little small town. Leslie knows where it is. Some of you cats have been out there. Up there, it's near San Antonio, and couldn't wait to get out. I mean, it's a gorgeous place. It's one of the nicest spots in Texas, but it's just boring. There's a little river runs through it, and there's a bunch of damn deer out there, and everybody comes from all over the world to look at the river and look at the deer. And you know, but after you've run into a few of those deer and it's... swam in a river a few times, it's time to move to the big city. You know, it's a small town place. And moved to Houston and I was an apprentice in a food business. I was a professional cook, chef for years and years and years and was pretty successful. Wired pretty fast and in that process of drinking was very dominant in my life, but it wasn't causing me any problems. I was what you'd call a functioning alcoholic, like a lot of y'all in here. I wasn't going to jail and wasn't robbing liquor stores and doing any weird stuff. I was just drinking too much sometimes. And in the food business, that was pretty acceptable. So we just got away with it. But found some of those outside issues along the way. And, I was off to the races. Did a lot of moving around. Was in Atlanta for about a year and then back to Texas, different cities. And same story, second verse. The depression's kind of kicking my butt. You know, we've got a little third piece here called the spiritual malady that the book is quite clear about. It's an internal discomfort, and I had it all my life. It looks like this. It looks like irritable, restless, and discontent. Could y'all dig that? depressed, bored, anxious, yeah, trouble in personal relationships, this low self-esteem. That's going on inside me. Now, that stuff leaves when I drink. When I drink, I feel great. I do great. When alcohol and dope were working for me, folks, I can tell you, I was a better person because of it. And that's what normal drinkers and druggers don't know. Our family members that don't drink and drug at all, they don't understand this. They just think we're partying too dang much. It was a party for a short period of time for me. And then it became an absolute necessity. I'm getting a six-pack just to get right to go do laundry. I mean, what's that about? You know? I mean, I got to get drunk to go to the grocery store. I mean, what is that? I don't mean squashed, sloppy. I mean, but you know, I'll say this, and the normal people in this room won't understand, in this gathering won't understand. I had to get right. Could y'all? I'm not drinking to get loaded. I'm drinking to get right. And when it was, again, working, I could hit that target pretty often. But as it progressively got worse, it was less and less likely that I could drink the right amount to get right. I'd get there for a few minutes and then miss it. You know, I've screwed up a lot of great dates. Why couldn't we have gone out at 3 this afternoon when I was right, you know? But now it's 8 o'clock and I'm squashed, you know, and my eye patch is on crooked. I look like I'm wearing an earmuff, you know, and it's... I don't know why she don't want to kiss me, you know. Oh, geez. I was dancing pretty good at 3 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock and I've kind of lost my sense of beat. So, y'all understand what I'm saying. Now I'm just getting sloppy. So, and I don't want to do it. And I swear off and I'm not going to do it. And starting to get problems. And I started seeing a therapist early on. About the time I discovered cocaine, I started seeing a therapist. Go figure. And the therapists were doing a great deal. I get a bad rap. You know, people pick up CDs. They say, you're knocking therapy. I have never knocked therapy ever. I'm the hugest. We probably have some in this gathering. Thank you for devoting your life to something that I could never do. To sit in a room and listen to you piss and moan about your problem for an hour, I don't care how much you're going to pay me. I ain't doing it. Love therapists. Love therapists. And I benefited. I was 10 years in and out of therapy, and I know a lot about myself and a lot about my family of origin and a lot about my inner effing child and a lot of good stuff. They had me on many, many pills. And because every time you go to a different therapist or psychiatrist, they feel kind of committed to give you something. Well, they've misdiagnosed you. You're bipolar. Oh, well, that answers it, you know? I'll never forget leaving one of those therapists. And I'm drinking, and the lady explains to me, she says, Chris, did you know that alcohol is a depressant? And I was like, who knew? No wonder I'm depressed. And I remember going home and telling my first wife, you know, sit down and, you know, crack the quart of beer. Do you realize that this is a depressant? Gunk, gunk, gunk. Oh, geez. And I take the antidepressants to go with it. And I'm taking 7 pills a day, anti-anxiety medication, antidepressants. I'm taking a pill for everything under the sun except Viagra. I just feel it necessary to share from the podium tonight. It's small, but it works great. I'll probably regret that later. But so, taking these pills, blah, blah, blah. First marriage is gone. I started Alcoholics Anonymous. I went to AA my first time to try to save that first marriage. And it didn't work because I never stopped drinking while I was going to Alcoholics Anonymous. But one of the things it's part of my story. I just need to tell you. I was not one of those that walked into AA and fell in love with you. I hear people from the podium, I walked in and I just fell in love with you people. I walked in and hated your guts. You know, I was miserable. I was dying. I hated myself. You know how when you hate yourself, you don't like anybody else. And y'all were happy, seemed like, and making money. And I'm just, you know, I hate it, you know. And I walked into my first AA meeting, and they went around the room and and told their usual little scary war stories. And it's a soapbox of mine, and I won't hit it too hard tonight because I don't want to get beaten up. But there's more to this thing getting sober than your stupid story. Your story is extremely important in a 12-step call. But once we come into the meetings, folks, we're here. You got me. Dig? Can you tell me how to get sober? Or are we going to have to listen to you how you robbed that liquor store one more time? I'll say it again. It's one of the reasons we can't keep the young adults in our meetings. It's one of the reasons we have such a tough time keeping women in our meetings, because we're too busy trying to scare them into recovery with some stupid cockamamie war story. Bill Wilson was crystal clear about this, if you'll read the literature, folks. War story is where we get their identification. Once we've got it, we need to get on now and tell them how to get sober. That's why I love literature-based meetings, because that's what we do in those meetings. But I'm sitting in these meetings listening to these guys talking, and at the time, I didn't have anything. I know everybody wants to talk about the yets. Guys, listen, I got a friend of mine in Canada that used to do that, get frantic with me. You know, you never had a DWI yet, wink, wink. You know, on his last cocaine binge, he had a stroke, and he will be a veg-all for the rest of his life. You with me? I'm going to tell you again, fear will not keep you sober, and the memory of your last debacle won't keep you sober. So why is it that we spend so much time talking about it? Instead of doing what the book says, pulling somebody with a vision, we're going to scare them. I sat in that first meeting and just was, this guy, DWI. And I'm sitting there thinking, smiling, thank you for sharing. You know, I've never had a DWI. Check. This guy's had 3 DWIs. Go back right. This guy's had 3 DWIs and robbed that liquor store. Check, check, check. I've not done any of that. This guy beats his wife. Check, check. This guy's a mass murdering child molester. Check, 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 check. I can't relate. If he had talked about the physical allergy and the mental obsession and the spiritual malady, I could have related. But I couldn't relate to the stupid war stories. You don't understand. Bottoms are rising, folks. We're not just getting people off the streets. We're getting people out of corporate America. Thanks to the litigation boom out there, a lot of people are getting P-tested, and they're coming into our fellowships, but they can't relate to the scary stories. And I was one of them. I came in, sat for a few meetings, and left. Got loaded, came back, listened to a few more meetings, and left. Y'all down with this? When we weren't trying to scare me in, we were trying to fix my problems. We call them junior therapy meetings. Y'all like those? In mainstream AA, they're called open discussion meetings. It's my biggest soapbox. And most of you in this, a lot of you love them. Oh, we get to come and listen about your day. How exciting. Jesus. You know, we took the time, Leslie, to read the traditions a minute ago, right? Read the traditions. 5th tradition. We've got one primary purpose. Would somebody like to tell me what that primary purpose is? We're going to stay sober. We're going to help other alcoholics achieve sobriety. Dig? And how are we going to do that? We just talked about it in the doctor's opinion. We're going to try to help them have a spiritual experience. How are we going to do that? Because we're never going to get around talking about God, because we're too busy talking about your fucking divorce one more time. Drives me nuts. Read Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. Guys, there's some great lines in there that says point blank, we didn't talk about our war stories and do all this other nonsense in there. We talked about how to get sober. We talked about working the steps and having necessary spiritual experiences. We talked about how our lives were better today as a result of working the steps. But guys, I'm going to tell you something, folks. The cats that come into our hospital, when they look up on the wall and they see that this is a 12-step based program, and they go, oh, shit, more AA. They hate it. They've been there. Why did they leave? They'll tell you the same thing every time. If I have to go to those meetings and listen to somebody whine about their day one more time, I'm going to cut my throat. I'm going to repeat it. We are not a self-help program. Do I think you need to talk about your problem? You ought to see how this audience shifted when I started talking about this. Everybody got uncomfortable. Guys, I'm not speaking from any spiritual mountaintop. I've done it. Let me tell you about that girl that cheated on me again. Why? Because I feel better talking about it. Did I stay sober? Absolutely not. I'll say it again. Do I need to talk about it? Yes. That's what the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. We sit out here, we lay by the pool, we talk, we go to Denny's, we visit, we share our days with each other. But for Christ's sake, for an hour a day, can't we just talk about the solution? Everybody applaud. I don't care if I'm talking here or in Europe. Everybody applauds. And then they go right back into their meetings and do the same thing again. Well, we have to have a place for the newcomer to share. Guys, I think it's a great idea if you're a newcomer. I'm not going to shoot you if you get off track or off target. I'm talking about the cats that believe that AA is a place to go talk about your day. It's not. If you think it is, show me in the literature where it says that. You won't find it. See, there's two things going on. There's the fellowship, and that's what we're doing, and then there's the program. And I'm around AA for 7 years in the fellowship, and I never bothered to get into the program. And that's where we get well. My story. In 1987, I am done, folks. I am so tired of this. I know our family members, they get so frustrated because we keep telling them we go through another debacle and come out the other side and beg their forgiveness and tell them we're going to stay sober. And then we turn right around and the next week we get loaded again. And it's like, it's got to be so frustrating for them. But guys, you know how frustrating it is for us. It's after a while, you just lose hope. I've tried treatment. I've tried therapy. I've tried 100 different churches. I've sat naked in sweat lodges. I've had crystals stuck up my butt. We were laughing the other time. I was in Phoenix not long ago. We were talking about this. I even did colonics one time. I mean, guys, you've got to really want to get sober to do that. I will say this. My complexion cleared up quite nicely. But I didn't stay sober a day. In 87, I'm working for my twin brother. He's in the fellowship too now. But at the time, he owns a big bookbindery up in Dallas. And some of y'all have met him. And he's a great guy. But I was off the street because he was supporting me and allowing me to work in his warehouse. And I went home to North Texas. I had a little apartment that he co-signed for me. And picked up a stack of return checks. And the bank account's gone again. And I sat on the floor of my apartment. My dope dealer's got my furniture. I lent it to him. And I'm on the floor trying to figure out what I'm going to do. I'm 35 years old, and I'm physically dying. I have damage to my body. I periodically puke blood. I hallucinate. I hear voices. I can't make a decision to turn right or left at the stop sign. You know, it's the little things in my life that are killing me. The book says our problems pile up on us and they become astonishingly difficult to solve. I mean, guys, just getting dressed in the morning is a fiasco. You know, I just can't make decisions. My little head's not hitting on all cylinders anymore. And I sat there on that floor and made a conscious decision to commit suicide. I got up, went to the medicine cabinet, took a couple of bottles of pills, drank them down with a quart of beer. Nothing romantic about it, nothing glorified about it. It's the coward's way out. I almost immediately heard a voice that said, "Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA." I heard a voice that said, "Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA." I looked around to see who was in the room with me. I live in an efficiency, for heaven's sakes. I mean, you can see the whole room from the mirror I was standing in front of. There's nobody in there. But I heard a voice, and I heard it two or three times that night, and the same thing every time. "Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA." And I'm arguing with the voice. I made myself sick. It gave me the creeps. I says, "I'll go back to AA, because this was freaking me out." And I made myself sick, but I'm arguing with the voice. I says, "I don't want to go back to AA. AA works. I know it works for some people, because I can see you guys getting sober. But for the real sickos like me, it won't work." The next morning, I got up hungover from hell, and I heard somebody from a meeting, "Real alcoholics don't get hangovers." Well, go figure. miserable, and went to a doctor, got some doggy downers, and to try to detox. I can't go back to, I have no money, I have no insurance, I have nothing. And that night at 6 o'clock after work, I drove up to an AA meeting I'd never been to before. But it was I walked in the back door, and I believe it was part of my first spiritual experience. Was as bad as I didn't want to go in there, I went in there. And I walked in the back door, and I knew I'd screwed up from day one. Because I walked in, and I noticed that everybody had a big book in front of their laps. They were laughing, joking. They were all carrying big books. And I knew I'd screwed up. I had landed square in a nest of big book thumpers. There was not going to be any date getting tonight. There was not going to be any job hunting tonight, you know. No money lending tonight. This was going to be a study. And, geez, I walked in, and a little girl got between me and the door, wouldn't let me out. Because I just walked in and said, nah, I'm just looking for somebody. Just started to turn around and back out. And the little girl got me by the belt loop and set me down. A 19-year-old girl, folks. Thank God she wasn't sequestered at a little young adult meeting someplace. She was in mainstream AA. Thank you. Thank you. Not knocking it. She set me down in a chair, and they cleaned up my spilt coffee, and they went around the room that night. The chairperson had seen me up in North Texas for years, and the chairperson instructed the members in that group to share with me some hope, because that's exactly what I needed. I didn't need one more stupid war story, and I damn sure didn't need to hear your drama. I needed to hear some hope. Here's what I need to know, guys. Here's what I need to know. I need to know, is it possible to wake up in the morning and not obsess about alcohol? I need to know, is it possible to live a life without always feeling uncomfortable in your skin? It's what every newcomer needs to know. They did that. They went around the room and all shared little vignettes of their life. And they talked about stuff that I could get my teeth into. They didn't talk about being little sunbeams for Jesus, folks. They talked about stuff that I, in my sick state, could understand. Getting your credit cards back. Being in a cool, committed relationship. Buying a house. Getting a new car. Getting a sound system. Sleeping through the night. After the meeting, an old guy got up and came over, and shook my hand, and asked me if I was ready to stay sober the rest of my life. And I said, well, you know, one day at a time. And he said, buddy, that's what I thought you'd say. And he got his coffee and he left the room. I chased after him. He stopped me about halfway to the coffee room and he says, buddy, I'm not trying to pick a fight with you, but I'm not here to help you stay sober one day. I'm here to help you have a spiritual experience so that for the rest of your life you can live free. You see, the big book says that I'm supposed to ask the newcomer if he's done yet. It's amazing how much energy we spend on people that are just not done yet. I said, ask me the question again. He did. And I said, yes. And he hugged my neck. And I mean one of those AA hugs, you know. Like, welcome. The next morning they were on my doorstep. Make sure I made it back to the AA meeting. In case I had a change of heart over the night. I'm detoxing, you know. And we went back into the meeting at a 10 o'clock AA meeting. And then afterwards we chased the Al-Anon ladies out of their room. Because we needed some privacy. And they'd sat down the night before and gone over the physical allergy and the mental obsession with me. They qualified me that night. And for the first time, I understood that I was dying of a fatal progressive illness and that my drinking and drugging didn't have a thing to do with my outside issues. A bunch of y'all in this gathering tonight believe your drinking and drugging has something to do with your issues. They don't. Your issues exacerbate the problem and make it worse. That's why we need to deal with them. They don't cause it. Let me ask you a question. Why is it that when we get somebody sober and we watch them just stay dry for about 6 months, the further away they get away from that drink, the worse they get? Their outside world is better. They're going to work. They're putting money in the bank. Their external world starts to look a lot better. But their internal world comes apart at the seams. That's alcoholism, folks. That's drug addiction. We got on our knees in that Al-Anon room and did a third step prayer. Day two, where we asked God to be our Father. They explained to me that God was going to help me remove those difficulties, that God was going to take charge and lead me to a different place in my life if I would finish the work. We went and got some food, came back. The same guy that had 12-stepped me that night threw a little notebook down in front of me and said, "Let's get started on that fourth step." You with me? It was a Saturday. I sat down and started working on it. Guys, 2 weeks later, I drove home after a meeting, Friday night meeting. I'm going to meetings, and I've got a finished fourth step. I'm ready to dump a fifth step with my sponsor. I'm already doing 10, 11, and 12 because these guys have got me doing it. And I pulled up to my little apartment complex and got out and got in the parking lot where I tried to commit suicide 2 weeks before, sat on the tailgate of my truck, looked around and realized I was surrounded by triggers. 7-Eleven, stop and go, Circle K. Y'all down? Friday night, got a pocket full of money. I sat there and cried like a baby because I realized that the obsession to drink had lifted. And for some strange reason, I didn't want to drink. Not, I'm afraid to drink. The problem had been removed. The 10-step promises that promises a position of neutrality had taken place in my life. Guys, and people come up after I share and they say, "Well, you know, everybody's not going to have that same experience." I don't know of anybody that didn't have that same experience when they did the work. When they stopped talking and got up and started doing the work, they had the spiritual experience. It's just my experience. Guys, they had me doing work. A Sunday night, we went back into a meeting, and they said, "Chris, can you answer the phones?" I've told a bunch of y'all this story. And I said, "No, absolutely not." And it's just like so many of us. I want to be a part of your fellowship, but I don't want to commit to do anything. I'll go to your meetings, but I mean, you want me to, next thing you'll be wanting me to do is chair a damn meeting, you know? And it's like, yeah, that's the idea. We're going to make you a part of this. They said, "You answer the phones for us." And I 10 seconds after, I said, "No, I wouldn't do it," the phone rang, and they just crossed their arms and stood back and waited until I answered the phone. I said, "What do I say?" I said, "Hello?" You know? They were right there watching me. I answered the phone, Louisville Group. It turned out somebody wanted a meeting. It was an Al-Anon, for heaven's sakes. And she wanted a meeting schedule. They pointed where the meetings were. I told her when the meeting schedule was, when the meeting was, and I just, guys... I realized that I'd known this lady, you know, and she recognized my voice and I recognized her about the same time. And it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, "Buddy, I'll meet you out front. Just come on over and I'll meet you out front. You remember me, little guy with a patch. Come on, let's." And then there I was. I mean, my first 12-step call. It's an Al-Anon, for heaven's sakes. But it was terrific. I snagged her, took her back to the Al-Anon, introduced her to the ladies, you know, showed her where the bathrooms were, got her a cup of coffee. And I'm going to tell you something, folks. This is the miracle of it. And I walk back into that coffee room, you know, standing just a little bit taller. You know, everything's going to be, I got this taken care of now. I mean, they created a monster with me. You, for the next 6 months, you couldn't even go near my telephone up there. No, newcomer, go up there and start, "No, you, buddy, this is real important. You could kill somebody if you answer this wrong," you know. Oh, God. I got to tell you real quick, because I'm going to whine. I keep looking at my... The big book doesn't talk about being open-minded, folks. I know we talk about it in our meetings a lot. The big book talks about humility and willingness. And these are the combatants of a thing called pride. And it's pride that keeps us sick. Could y'all get down with that? Big book on page 62 says selfish and self-centeredness, that's the root of the problem. It didn't say alcohol and cocaine, that's the root of selfishness that's the problem. Guarded by this thing called pride. You can hear it. If you listen real close, you can hear it in here right now. But you don't understand, my case is different. And that's what kills alcoholics and addicts. And that's what these guys understood. They didn't let me go, keep coming back, 90 meetings in 90 days, a bunch of little chicken shit one-liners. They said, "Buddy, you've got to come finish this work so that you can have the necessary spiritual experience." Now, I'm not knocking meetings. Go to meetings.
But just going to meetings and not drinking will not treat alcoholism. The steps get us connected to God, and God treats the alcoholism. It's just that simple. Pride. Pride. I don't have to do what you do to stay sober. Pride. My case is different because I have other issues. Pride. Let's do the work, folks. My one piece of soapbox. This is it. There's hundreds of us in this gathering. All of us belong to a thing called a home group. At a home group, there's a thing called a group conscience. In a group conscience, you follow that? In a group conscience, we vote on our formats. Traditions allow us to do formats any way we want. The fact that they were killing us through the 80s with a preponderance, abundance of open discussion meetings doesn't mean that we have to keep it that way. We go in and we change the formats to the meetings to literature-based meetings where we read a couple of paragraphs out of the book and we talk about that paragraph. And over a period of a few weeks, a few months, we work our way through the steps. We get to see what this fellowship is really all about. And we focus and we utilize those paragraphs that we read in conjunction with the stuff that's going on with our lives. And that's how we learn to live a spiritual way of life. But we go to meetings in Texas, folks, where nobody even carries big books. I can go to Dallas, Texas right now and there'll be over 1,500 open freaking discussion meetings. 25 literature-based meetings in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Y'all understand what that means? That means if I want to try to get it figured out how to make these amends, I've got to go look for a meeting where we can talk about that. But if I just want to go talk about my stupid divorce one more time, they're on every corner. Everybody gets tweaky. Again, I'm going to say it. I'm not saying it's not important to talk about the divorce. Come before the meeting. Let's stay late after the meeting. Let's go to Denny's. I buy. Tell me all about it. Good sponsorship is the problem what we're having, folks, because we got too many people dusting the newcomers because they don't want to spend time working with them. So the best we can get from most people is just keep coming to meetings. There's no accountability. And the little guy starts to get off in deep water. There's nobody to hold him accountable. Guys, we need some accountability in our fellowships. Meetings are for everybody, men and women. Women need a safe place to come to meetings. Women need a safe place to come to meetings. It's not a pickup joint. Can you date? Yes. Can you have sex? Hopefully. But buddy, the person you're tapping on the shoulder, you better wait till they're on some solid ground before you start the tapping. Now, whose responsibility is that to make sure that that takes place? I'm going to tell you, as a responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous with nearly 18 years, it's my responsibility. It's not my responsibility to look the other way while some little girl gets pulled out sideways. I flip her to a woman to do the work with. I'm going to tell you this, guys. For every one of you women that have stayed in this fellowship, I thank you. Thank you. Lots of women come to the fellowship, and they get married, and they leave, they go have babies, whatever, but they're not here. For every one of you that have stayed, thank you. For every one of you old-timers that have carried a book into a meeting and been made fun of, thank you. Thank you for doing what Bill and Dr. Bob had in mind. For every one of you that got a stupid open discussion meeting and it started going down the toilet, somebody wanted to talk about their problems with their babysitter, and you shut them up, thank you. Thank you for being responsible enough to re-steer the meeting so that we could talk about the solution to alcoholism. It takes grit to stay sober, folks. It takes grit to stay in the trench and help others get well. I'm compelled to say it because I've been talking to you guys for the last 2 days, and there's so many of you I've talked to. Here's the picture that the old timers painted for me. Chris, sobriety is not about just not drinking one day at a time. Sobriety is about getting connected to this power that's going to allow you to have more freedom than you've ever had in your life. Power to go out there and finally get the decent job so you can pay your bills. Power to go create, to paint the pictures, to do the cool stuff we're supposed to do, to go back to school, to start the business. That's what this is about. This is not a dumping ground for your problems. This is not a gathering of a bunch of victims sitting around hugging onto each other. This is ridiculous. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob understood it. That's why our success rates in 1955 were 75%. And that's why they hover around 8% now. Because we've taken the teeth out of our fellowship. This is about God. This is about the spiritual experience. Not about church. Not about religion. It is about spirituality. This makes you uncomfortable? Come see me. Come see a bunch of other people that I know in this audience that have had spiritual experiences. Because I guarantee you, folks, we're going to lead the fight against this disease. Used to be like that in the olden days. Treatment centers started taking over in the 80s and the 90s. I'm with you. I'm going to tell you something, folks. Right now, thanks to, 1997, the Supreme Court went ahead and backed up a bunch of court decisions. And what we've got now is treatment centers all over this country closing down. Doors slamming because they can't talk about God anymore. And you know where these people are coming? You're coming right back to our fellowships. And that means that you can't sit in your nice little club and play your dominoes. That means that you can't just sit there and watch the door as the newcomer comes in there and shakes and then turns around and walks back out because nobody got up and shook his hand, showed him where the coffee was, and explained what the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous was all about. There's going to be a bunch of people that are going to have to get responsible again. And I'll say this and shut up. And any of you cats sitting in this room, this gathering, that are telling the newcomers that they can't help any newcomers until they're sober a year, shut up now. Because I heard that for 7 years in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got to tell you, that was the noose around my neck. Because I had to get out of my head. I had to stop thinking about my problems. And the only way I could do that was work with another one. And they had me working with the people that first weekend I came in. They didn't have me sitting down doing the steps with somebody. They had me answering the phones. They had me volunteering for conventions like this. They had me get involved. Ask yourself right now, what commitment do I have this week in an AA meeting? You don't have one? Shame on you. The guys you're sponsoring, what commitments do they have? Because the guys I sponsor about 17 guys right now. Every one of them have got a commitment. Because I'm not going to keep them sober. They're going to have to participate in their own recovery. Let me ask you a question on the way out of here. Next time you're in a meeting, AA or any of the other fellowships, close your eyes and listen to what's being said. Don't say anything for the meeting. Just get quiet. Sit in the back. Smoke a butt. Get quiet. And listen to what's being said. And then ask yourself the question, did the newcomer hear what he needed to hear to stay sober? When did it become okay to not tell the newcomer how to get well? I had people in the early 80s when I was in AA tell me point blank, don't worry about this God stuff. You better worry about this God stuff. You better worry about the spiritual experience. Because if you're a real alcoholic and a dope fiend like me, you're going to need it. When did it become okay not to tell the newcomer how to get well? Pull them with a vision, folks. You got something good going on in your life? Share it. Share it with a newcomer. Let him know there's some real power in this program. Sit in meetings and listen to people go out. I'm just powerless. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. That's treatment center crap. That's treatment center crap. My book doesn't say I'm powerless over people, places, and things. My book says lack of power is the dilemma. How are we going to find some power? Well, that's exactly what this program is about. To get some power, to go out there and do the cool things we always wanted to go do. Make sense? A newcomer will buy into that. That little 18-year-old kid, he'll buy that. He wants power just like we want power. He wants the excitement of the fellowship. You sit in the meeting and tell him you're powerless and you're going to have to admit you're powerless every day in order to stay sober. Horse shit. There. I feel so much better having said that. Thanks for having me, guys.